The date today is 19th of March. I am Eleanor Levine, and I'm having a conversation with Judy Perley. And Judy, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself, please.
Hi, my name is Judy Perley. I run the Free Times Cafe at 320 College Street, right in the Harvard Village. And I've been running the Free Times Cafe for the last 32 years. And it's a very special place. It's the home of 7 days a week live acoustic music, as well as a very special Jewish brunch on Sundays called Bella, Did You Eat?
Any reason you call it that?
Yes, that's a long story.
Okay, that's story number one. Let's go.
Well, I was at my grandmother's place when I was a university student, and I had to do a history project, so I took a tape recorder, and I recorded my boobie telling stories about her life. And in those days, it was a reel-to-reel big deal box. And then after dinner, I put it down in her lap, and I said, "Boobie, listen to this." And she didn't know what a tape recorder was. She thought the voice coming out of the tape recorder was my mother on the telephone. So she picked up the tape recorder as if it was a telephone and started shaking it and said, "Bella, did you eat? Did you have supper?" So when I decided to do the brunch, I needed a name. I remembered that incident, and that was the name.
So, Bella, okay, but you also have Free Times Cafe.
Okay, so Free Times Cafe, I bought as Free Times Cafe. It was open for 3 months. It was a vegetarian and seafood restaurant. The original owners called it Free Parking Cafe. After a couple months, they went for the liquor license, and they said, "You can't call it Free Parking Cafe because you don't have any free parking." So they said, "How about Free Times?" They said yes, so it became Free Times Cafe. There you go. So when people walk in the door and they say, "What a great idea," I say, "What a big mistake."
So you've had this restaurant for over 30 years.
Yeah.
Talk to me, please, about why you were an artist before. Mm-hmm. So how did you move into the restaurant business?
Well, I was an artist who always had a hobby, cooking. You know, I love to cook from the time I was about 10 years old. And then I got into whole foods and natural foods in the early 70s, way ahead of my time. And I left teaching after a few years. I was married and the marriage split up. I left teaching, became an artist. And then I went back and I started a whole food catering business out of my home in 1977. Had that for 1 year. It was actually so successful that I quit it because I couldn't manage it. It was too much for me, and I didn't want to go into a regular business. Went work for my parents for a while. Then I did a art project of 18 paintings called High, of a natural childbirth. So I said after that, I could be an artist, but I'll be a starving artist. So I better establish myself in some kind of a business, and then I can choose to be an artist after 2 or 3 years. So I called up my girlfriend, Ophira Sutton, who had bought a house and was renovating it. And I said, "You know, I'm going to ask my father for some money. I'm going to buy a house. I'm going to renovate it. I'm going to sell it and make money." She said, "What do you know about real estate and renovations? You know about food. You should buy a restaurant." I said, "Oh, that's a good idea." And I looked in the newspaper. And sure enough, this place that I had been to a couple weeks before, this modern cafe on College Street called Free Times Cafe, was for sale. And it was one of two places that I pursued.
And that's so Ophira really turned you around.
Yeah, it was never a plan. It was never a plan. Even though I was brought up in restaurants, I went to a lot of restaurants as a child. My father designed menus for restaurants in Eglinton. I never had the idea in my mind I would ever own a restaurant. I was just driven by a love of cooking, a need for cooking, right? So I really had no idea what I was getting myself in for.
Can you talk about the early days and how it's
well,
evolved?
You know, I didn't have enough money to buy it myself, so my brother suggested I get a working partner. I found this guy who somebody I knew briefly knew. I got involved with him as a partner, and he wasn't very good. Basically, the place was bankrupt after 9 months. And during this time, my mother broke her arm, my grandmother died, my father died.
Oh. What a 9 months.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible.
Disaster. But my father left me a little bit of money, so I bought up my partner, and he started different programming, and I started to turn the place around.
What was the nature of the restaurant initially? And then after that 9 months when you took over, how did you...
Well, it was more like a restaurant with home cooking. I was doing a lot of the cooking. You know, we did everything from cabbage rolls to quiche to, you know, falafel to all kinds of world foods that we still do today, different kinds of world foods. We didn't have a deep fryer. We didn't have a grill. We had a stove. We didn't have a microwave. We just had a stove and a salamander.
Salamander? What's that?
That's a very high-powered broiler.
Uh-huh.
And I did a lot of the cooking. There was no entertainment at night. Didn't start that for a bit. And it was very stressful. Because
please remind me, what year was that?
1980, 81.
80, okay.
81, yeah.
And it was stressful because of what? Because
I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
And my partner was a very negative person who also knew even less of what he was doing. But, you know, of course, since he was a man, he had to pretend he knew what he was doing. Plus all the other things that were happening in my life that were very difficult. You know, my grandmother died, my father died, my mother broke her, you know, all this stuff.
Huge.
And the money drain, because when you're not successful, you have no money. So money is always a big, big problem.
So you were working very hard.
For very little money.
Yeah.
With a partner who was very negative. And I was only 31 years old. Right? 30, 31 years old. I was quite young.
Who were your customers at first? Who was coming into the
mostly
restaurant?
Mostly it was
in
lunch. We had lunch customers, and mostly from, you know, what is now CAMH, which was, what was it called before?
Clark Institute.
The Clark.
Yeah.
A lot of lunch customers from the Clark and the university. They're still customers. We uh-huh. have less customers from CAMH now because most have been moved down to Queen Street. Mm-hmm. But we always had a good customer base from them. So I would say it was middle class professionals. Mm-hmm. More women than men, and in those days people would drink at lunch. They would have wine. It was drinking and smoking in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
We had this room in the back, nice little room. So there weren't a lot of restaurants around. There weren't a lot of alternative places. So we were one of the alternative places with fresh, homemade foods, you know, well prepared, with a liquor license. Not that many places with liquor licenses then.
And what, did you close early at that time? Because you had such a big
Well, we started to stay open for evenings, but we didn't have much business for dinner. Mm-hmm. And we did. I guess we probably stayed open until about 10 o'clock or something like that at night.
And has that changed? Is it busy for dinner, or is lunch still a busier time?
I would say, yeah, lunch is probably a busier time for us than dinner, but then now we're busy later at night.
With what?
Because of the entertainment. It gets very busy at night, and also young people coming in to drink and hang out and have snacks at night.
Please talk about the entertainment. When did you introduce that, and how many nights a week did you do it?
Okay, so at the time when I started the restaurant, I was going out with a man who was a part-time jazz musician, and his nephew was studying jazz at Humber College, and he asked if he could come and play on a Saturday night. We had this little room in the back. So I said, okay, and so we started, you know, once a week, then it became twice a week, then it was three times a week, and people didn't have places to play, so a lot of musicians asked me if they could play, and that's how it all started.
But Judy, isn't that interesting that it started because you were dating a man at that time whose nephew, blah, blah, blah.
I told you, it's a big mistake. It's not a plan. Life is not a plan. Life is a mistake.
It's really a mistake, but look what you've done. I mean,
that's right. You take mistakes and you make them into something. So I'm a very positive person on the whole, and I'm very arts-oriented. So I always thought of the arts as being a way to generate revenue, which is proven to be so. The government, you know, looked at that being going in different directions. But people are attracted. People go for tourism. They go out for the arts and for restaurants. Yeah.
You have this entertainment now. Is it Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
No. It's been 7 days a week.
Seven days a week?
Oh, yeah, for the last 30 years.
Oh,
yeah, I've had more than 10,000 nights of music.
My daughter-in-law has performed it here.
Yeah, almost every musician in Toronto has started out at Free Times and at some time performed at Free Times, whether I booked them or they played with other people or whatever. But, oh, yeah, every single night.
Do you have somebody who takes care of that? Because that's
a
whole other, so that's just another hat that you wear in your own
restaurant.
Just
another part-time job, right? Now I have other people who book some of the nights on because they have their own business and they put people in. But yeah, I've been doing the majority of the time. I've been doing the booking. I have had people at certain times, but I would say out of the 30 years, I've probably booked it solidly myself for 25 of it, maybe 5 years.
And I have been there a variety of times, but certainly when Gus plays with his group. And I brought my grandson.
Yeah, because we're all ages. We're actually a licensed restaurant. So we're all ages. And that's been, you know, one of the keys to keeping Free Times going. And the other was starting my Sunday brunch, because at the time when I started my Sunday brunch, we had gone through a difficult time. After 10 years, also, we had a fire. The place burnt down. We were closed for 6 months.
Oh.
I redid the whole place. And then I moved the kitchen and put it in the front, and it took away a lot of the seating, so a lot of our revenue started to drop down. And I kind of took some time off. And then I said, you know what? And my mother died, and I was in her house. I said, you know, I'm Jewish, and I know how to cook Jewish food. I don't have any Jewish food in my restaurant. And then I thought up this fantasy of having this, getting Jewish customers and having a more Jewish restaurant.
And when was that?
That was in 1995.
So you had been in business for 15 years.
15 years, yeah. So I was in business for 15 years before the brunch went in. And I spent a whole summer researching it, researching the food, and I really analyzed the whole situation with Jewish customers as to how I could make it successful. So it didn't actually happen by chance.
So you had lots of conversations with people about Jewish food.
Not really. I just remembered all of the different issues that Jewish customers had, and I joke about it, like they want the food on the table before they get there. They want to make reservations so they can change them, right? They like to go out in groups. They're very picky. They don't want this. They want that, da-da-da-da. And it's got to be, like, better than expected. Unless it's because they go out a lot, so unless it's better than expected, why bother coming back? Move on. Right?
So you know that population. You make fun of them, but you love them and you take good care of them.
And I'm one of them. I try to be a more anglicized, respectful one of them, but I am one of them. So, I said, okay, you know, it's going to be better than expected. Everything's got to be great. I got to research it. And then I hired somebody and I trained him how to cook everything.
So you used your mother's recipes, your recipes?
A couple of my mother's, mostly my own. Because I have a God gift to cook. And I can make up recipes for anything. Mm-hmm. Okay? And I made up the recipes. I read cookbooks and then I made up my own recipes. But it's based on, you know, they're based on how I remember my mother and my grandmother doing things, you know?
Has the population that comes into your restaurant...
Yeah.
Now that you have all this Jewish food, do you have more Jewish people coming in, or what's the
since when?
Since
I started the brunch.
Since you started the Jewish food, or was that there the whole time?
No, I started the Jewish food with the brunch. Then
that was 1995. Okay, so it's at that point. I'm wondering when you made it more Jewish.
Oh, yeah.
Did it change the?
Of course, I had hardly any Jewish people coming before.
Okay, that's what
only
I'm asking you.
Just for maybe some of the entertainment or something. But no,
so
I wasn't.
So you're saying the Jewish people want the Jewish food?
They do, but they want it. You have to figure out how can you do it for them that'll make it work. Because I wasn't starting this place from scratch; I was bringing it into an existing place.
Yes.
So I said, okay, I'll just have it once a week. I'll have this brunch. It'll be a buffet, over the top. And it'll be really holistic. And at first I used my dishes, my grandmother's dishes, my mother's dishes. I said, I'm going to just give them to the gods. If they break, they break. That's it. And I said, you know, the recipes are going to be really authentic. I'm going to take the time to put the extra things in to make it really, really good. I'm going to shop myself for the desserts and cut them up and da-da-da-da and this and that. And then I hired a publicist to publicize it. And, you know, we're talking about a long time ago, pre-internet, all this kind of stuff. And it was something new and something different. And it was very busy right from the beginning, you know. But then it got wrecked by 9/11, got wrecked by SARS, got wrecked by 3 years of construction on College Street. Oh. And I had to reinvent it. So then I added the all-you-can-eat smoked salmon about 4 or 5 years ago. It wasn't all the time.
I'm not familiar with that. What is that?
Well, smoked salmon, lox.
But you said all you can eat.
Well, it's there, platters of it. You can, we didn't have it before, the slices. And I haven't upped the price for years because it's at a threshold, $19.95. If I try to up it, I'm doomed. I have to keep that price, even though my costs have gone up like about $500 a week, costing me from the time I last raised it. And I have to keep absorbing.
And you're renting the space, right?
Yes.
So is that something that's also gone up through the years?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And now I pay over seven. When I started Free Times, I had one half, and I paid $700 a month. Now I have two storefronts, and I pay more than $7,000 a month.
So,
but the margins have not gone up that much.
Yeah.
So it's very hard. You have to be very busy to even break even in the restaurant business. This is why places come and go. Because you can't just be busy once in a blue moon. You have to be busy about half, you know, at least a third of the time. You have to be very, very busy.
Well, I'm watching places close on Harbor for that reason, and on Bloor Street.
Splendido just closed. Splendido is closing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Which other place on Harbor?
Macis.
No. They're closing?
It's closed. It closed about 2 weeks ago.
Are you joking me?
Momo's just sold. It's closing in about 2 weeks. Yeah, Macis.
Macis?
Yeah.
Wow. That's surprising. I thought that that was a real popular... I went there a little while ago. It was only so-so. It wasn't great.
Yeah.
It wasn't great.
That's,
see, at that level,
it's
tough.
And
Momo's,
eh? Yeah. Momo's is closing in about 2-3 weeks.
Yeah? Yeah. But you said it sold.
Well, he sold the building. But the person taking over is not going to make it into a restaurant.
So he bought the building. He was smart.
Mm-hmm.
But remember the old Kensington Kitchen that was on Harbor Street?
Yes,
of
course.
That was originally next door to me. So a few months after I opened Free Times, Kensington Kitchen opened up next to me right on College Street and had similar food. So right away I had this intense competition, which was also very difficult.
Okay, so and that you're talking about 1980 when you bought. When did they move away?
I think in 1990, maybe.
Oh, so you had a decade of competition right next door.
Well, I've been through a lot. I still go through a lot. Every week there's stuff, you know?
What's it like for you being in the restaurant as obviously you have your hand on every aspect of it.
Yeah.
But in terms of the people who come to eat at your restaurant, what's your relationship with them?
Well, I don't have as much of a relationship as people think I do. I probably have a much stronger relationship with my staff. And that's the thing that actually customers don't realize about restaurants, is the owner is relating much more strongly with their staff than they are with their customers. I'm there for my customers. I like interacting with them. I like... the variety, I'm always blown away by the variety of people that come to my place. It's just truly unbelievable. I could be talking to a university professor at lunch, and that night it's a young kid coming out drinking from the suburbs. It could be any age group, from a little child to a very old person, any ethnic background. It's so interesting. They all find my place so interesting. It's a new reality for a lot of people. It's a completely different reality. And that was actually the intention. My core intention in doing the place, even though I kind of fell into it, was around finding a place where I felt comfortable, because I didn't feel comfortable anywhere. And I think that was a big issue, and continues to be a big issue in Toronto for people, because of the nature of the hospitality industry here. It's just gotten started in really the last 10 years in Toronto.
How do you feel you make yours comfortable, the way you like to feel, and you create that in your restaurant?
Well, it's layered. You know, it's a layered thing. It's the kinds of seating where people can sit in corners and they can sit in booths, and they have intimacy and they have different choices of seatings.
Yes, there is a nice variety.
Yeah, and then I have layered decor. I have my parents' old things. I have things I've collected. I have other artwork. I have pictures of musicians. I have lots of memory stuff there. We originally we had changing art shows, but I had at least 100 art shows at Fruit Times. And I stopped doing art shows probably about 5 years ago because I wanted to control the environment more, which I think from a business point of view was very successful. I don't recommend changing art shows for a restaurant. I think it kind of makes a confused atmosphere for your clients. Anyways, and I keep also putting money into my business to maintain it and to improve it. And it's not perfect. I work in the imperfection. I also weave in imperfection into my business. Not everything is perfect. Not everything has to be perfect. There's, you know, actually the bistro, when we built it, we actually wove in imperfection. We wove found objects. We wove in things to it. And I can go over the room with you and explain exactly what we did, recycled objects, and that's why it has a lot of soul and why people think it's a very old room, but in fact it's only 13 years old. Yeah. Before that it was a computer store.
Oh, so you want that atmosphere.
Yeah,
that warm,
so I
cozy
invested
atmosphere.
In it in a way that doesn't show, because I'm not an ostentatious type of person. So if you aren't ostentation, people can enter into it. And plus, I'm artistic, so I understand what's involved in art.
So it's subtle.
It's subtle. Yeah, it's very subtle. And people respond to it, and they don't know why. But they do like it. And I have many things going on. I have music in the back, I have groups in there, you know, there's this and that. Sometimes I've got 4 or 5 different things going on in the restaurant, other than just regular customers.
Can you give me an example of what you're referring to? Other things going on?
Yeah, I might have a computer. Okay, Java users groups, you know, last Thursday of the month would be meeting in the club room. Then I might have another meetup group in the bistro as well as regular customers. And then when they're finished, I have music after their group. They move into the bistro. And then I have, you know, maybe a group of friends in the front. So it's like different things.
I think you have a Yiddish-speaking group.
Yeah, the first Thursday of every month. And they would be in the back. And then we have a buffet. And then I might have, you know, I have customers in the bistro or other groups. Or it's all interwoven. And that's how I keep the place going, because I'm willing to take those risks. Sometimes it's not perfect. That's why I get upset when people are not considerate and respectful to my position and have their own personal interests, selfish interests. And, you know, they get when things, you know, certain people, when things do not go perfectly with them, they don't know how to negotiate. They just get angry. And not very many people, but it's very troublesome when that happens, and there's no need for it. And those kind of people really should learn to be more considerate for what they are getting.
And you're saying,
you know, and one of the reasons why places go under is because people don't appreciate those places and what goes into them. You know, they cannot, you know, for instance, young people are so very strange around money, okay? They'll spend money in certain ways and other ways they won't. If I raise my price 25 cents on a pint of beer, they'll go somewhere else, but they'll give a waiter a 100% tip on that pint, because they think that they're so poor and the owner's so rich. See what I mean?
I do.
So I have to work with that. I can't change that mindset. I have to work with that. And I make my staff work very hard for the money.
you're dealing with the public.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you said that it's very important to you to to be very aware of what's happening with your staff and to have a good working relationship with them.
Yeah, and I have staff that come and go. You know, they might work for me for a year and then go away, do something and come back. And they're all very special people. They're all very smart. Most have university degrees. They're all very capable. They all are very humble people. Nobody has a big ego. They're all very individualized. A lot involved in the arts. And I choose those kind of people, special people, very hardworking, mostly from small towns, not from the city, or from out of town. Very few people who work for me are born in Toronto.
Well,
isn't that interesting, eh?
And my experience has been really very, very lovely service from these young people.
Yeah. You see, country young people have better social skills. because they knew everybody in the mm-hmm. town or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're more relaxed around mm-hmm. people, you know? And a little calmer, you know?
And that's another half.
And they have to work. They're not at home. They have to support themselves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right?
But that's another hat that you're wearing, and that is hiring people and having to be the judge of who will work for your environment.
Plus, all my staff are friends with each other, so I have to consider who's going to be friend. Who are they going to get along with? Mm-hmm. What type of person will that there, and they'll tell me right away if they don't like somebody.
You know? Let's come back to College Street. When you first moved, you had this neighbor right away that you had competition with.
Yeah.
Would you spend a few minutes talking about College Street? What it has been like since 1980 as you've been there, and how it has changed?
Okay, so in the 1980s, that area of College Street was very different because you had a variety of different kind of stores. Because remember, as I said, the rents were very low, $700-$800 a month. So we had, you know, a clothing designer there. We had a stained glass window store. We had the health food store, Flying Monkey. We had a little variety store. We had the hardware store in the corner. We had Weinstein's drugstore, where the hot dog place is, on that place. So you had more core, practical type of businesses. Then what happened in the 90s is a Hong Kong Chinese came in and bought up all the properties. And the only people who could pay their ridiculously high rents, besides myself, who was already there, so I had to kind of settle in to higher rents, was computer stores. And that was when the computer stores, so all the whole place turned into computer stores. And that was the ruination of the area of College Street. And now that the computer stores can't stay in business, now we have empty stores that are in the process of being regenerated. But, you know, rents are high, and it's very, very hard for storefront businesses to survive. Because you can't survive just from people walking in the door. You can't. You have to have people who are coming to you as a destination or having a wholesale aspect to your business. You can't generate enough business from people walking in off the street. Parking is an issue. Walking is an issue. Everything is an issue.
So right now, you're saying some of the computer stores are closing.
Right now, there's 6 empty storefronts in one block. Half of the storefronts are empty right now, or in the process of being redone to reopen.
That's really a lot.
Tell me about it.
What's the solution?
Well, to me, the solution is that the government has to get more involved, and they have to stop charging 5 times the rate of residential in taxes. The commercial tax rate is 5 times the residential rate.
Okay.
And businesses have to pay half of those taxes, whatever is for their store, they have to pay. So it could be, you know, $10,000 a year that the business is paying just in the property taxes. And there has to be, like right now, I would like to buy my building, and they don't want to sell it to me. I have no recourse. I can't buy the building. Well, I should, after being in one spot for over 30 years, by law, I should be able to buy the building.
And there's
no laws of protection for businesses, you know?
But right now, that man has a lot of empty. Does he own more than just yours?
No, they're all owned by different people. Uh-huh. They're owned by different people. But they're all different Hong Kong Chinese people. Or older Jewish people that never let go of the properties.
So their children and grandchildren
and
will collect the rents.
And they charge really, really high rents, and really only multinationals can last.
So it's big.
And there isn't that much, you know, other places, Ossington, this and that, are more hip and cool. Our area, it's overestimated what a great location it is, because it's not a great location. People think it's a great location, but it's not a great location. The other side of College Street is a mess. You know, there's not a lot of...
Are you talking about east or west?
South.
Oh, the south, okay.
College Street, yeah. There's not a lot of commercial activity there. There's a lot of, you know, housing and, you know, churches and schools and medical centers and all this kind of stuff. There's blocks and blocks, fire, you know, hall, where there's no commercial activity. There's no reason for people to come.
Okay, so you're saying the more commercial activity, the better it is for everybody.
Yeah, there's going to be a condo built across the way.
But it's being shortened as we speak.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
Oh,
they
forced them to cut down?
Absolutely.
How many?
You know what? I don't know what the numbers are.
It was going to be 16 stories.
Oh, you know what?
They forced it down?
I don't know what the numbers are. I know that they wanted it to be much taller, and it's being shortened as we...
At this point in time, they have to shorten it?
I don't know.
Because I went, they had a model built of it a few months ago.
You know what? I don't know.
Whatever.
Maybe 16 is where it is, but...
Okay,
you know,
whatever. Yeah. That's fine. If they put it down to 12, that's fine, too. Or they put it down to 8 stories, that's fine, too.
Or maybe it started off
but
at much more and it's down to
16. But we need more people, middle-class people, living in the area. It's a big problem. It's the lowest income area of the city, and nobody knows that.
Around College Street there.
Kensington, College Street area is the lowest income area in the city.
Now, the people who walk through your door and enjoy what Free Times has to offer, do you have any idea of the ratio of those who come from walking distance or those who drive to your restaurant?
You mean that just walk or in those who come by TTC or drive?
Yes.
I say, I don't know exactly, but what I think is probably 80% come from away. 20% might come from the area.
So people know your restaurant and they make a trip to come to you.
Yes, and that's how I survive. They come for the music. They come for the brunch. They come at night. We do a lot of groups because we have group seating. You know, those might come from the university in different areas. I'd say, a lot come from away. It has to be. There's not enough economic activity in the area for a big place like mine to just fill up all the time and generate that much business.
As you've described,
and there's tons of competition in the area. Tons. In the last 5 years, I've probably had 20 restaurants open up between Bathurst and Spadina and College and Dundas.
And also in Kensington Market.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Tons. And they're good options. There's lots of good restaurants. So that money gets spread further and further and further, right? And I'm an old business, so I have to keep regenerating myself and giving people great deals and giving them reasons to come back, and right? So, you know, that's the mistake that a lot of places make. They think, they're going to open up a place and they're going to get all their business just from people on the street. You never get enough, not these days. You might for a month or two, maybe in the summer with the patios, but in the winter, what are you going to do in the winter? That's where Kensington has a lot of problems, because in the winter it dies.
I didn't know that. What about ethnicity and language? In all the years that you've been there, what have you seen?
Of my customers?
Yes.
Well, certainly have become more Jewish with my brunch, that's for sure. And I certainly get a lot of, like, Russians that I would never have gotten before. Of course, I have a lot of Chinese customers because they're in that area. I get a lot of just, you know, your mixed Canadians, East Indians. I get a huge cross-section of people. And then I get a lot of tourists, a lot of people bring people who are visiting from other countries to my place to see it because it's unique.
Which it is, yeah.
So it's very much like a cross-section. Somebody said, they said to me, Free Times is Toronto. So I think I very much am one of the most important places in Toronto in terms of a reflection of what the city is.
I'm glad you know that, because a lot of us feel that way about your restaurant.
Yeah, good. I've come to realize that, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I feel happy about what I've done.
And I think...
I come from a very Toronto family. Don't forget, my family was Pearly's Maps. My family business made Toronto in a very quiet way.
Well, and when people think of maps, they think of Pearly's Maps.
Yeah, without Pearly's Maps, Toronto wouldn't be the city it is today, because it wouldn't have been mapped.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I certainly still have... I still have a Pearly's Map in my glove compartment.
I had that from my parents, you know. They gave me that idea that it was important to do something, you know, just like the Jewish Chikon, but also in business, important in business, to, you know, do something that was important. And to me, business was never about making money. It was part of my problem. That's why I didn't make money for a long time. But it was about contributing. And it's just a shame. Now young people are starting to get the idea of, you know, doing business as, you know, something where they can make a living and contribute. But it's taken a while, you know.
Well, you do have a special atmosphere there.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware that you have so many different programs happening always. Yeah. So it takes some flexibility on your part and some risk-taking.
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're subject to the changes, let's say, social media, or people make reservations, 20 people are coming, then 6 show up.
And all you can do is say thank you very much, give them a table.
Or you make decisions. We want to bring 20 people at 9 o'clock on Friday night, or 30 people. Well, what do? I say, okay, you have to give me a deposit, because it's Friday night, it's busy. Then they don't come. So, difficult. People are not respectful of our business. They take advantage of us terribly, especially young people. They're not good to their word. They, you know, they make reservations, they don't show, or much less people. They don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
They're very inconsiderate.
So you have to learn to protect yourself.
Yeah. So I'm there, I get very good staff who can cover things. I interview people, I talk to them, I try and find out what's really going on when they want to make large group reservations, you know. And then with the brunch, we do have our reservations, and people are more respectful of that, but very often they're not. And, you know, they reserve for 8 and 5 show up. Well, sorry, they didn't come. Well, you know, what else is new?
So you're saying there are some inherent frustrations.
A lot.
And there's not much recourse.
No, there isn't, because restaurants are taken advantage of. You go to a theater, you pay up, and that's it. You don't go, you lose.
Yeah.
Well, with us, and I provide entertainment and everything else, right? And for the smallest thing, people don't want to pay, or they want compensation or whatever.
So they feel very entitled.
Very entitled.
Yeah, I'm the consumer.
Way too entitled. Yeah. Way too entitled.
Which means you're constantly dealing with the public, and you have to be somewhat diplomatic at the same time.
I have to protect my own interests.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And the interests of my staff, too.
So you're kept on your toes, Judy.
Totally. Which is good and bad. It's given me very good judgment. I have good judgment now. It's given me, you know, made me a more spiritual person, you know, because you've got to rise above all the mire of human pettiness. Mm-hmm. And see the bigger picture. Right?
And sometimes you
have to understand their suffering. You know, people are suffering. And part of the, you know, these things is because people are suffering, and they're maybe feel that in life they didn't get what they wanted or whatever, and it's sort of a theme, so you try to work with them and make them happy.
That's a generous interpretation. Rather than they're entitled or they're nasty.
Yeah. It's all that tied up. But majority are not like that. Majority are wonderful, great. I would say younger generation have their issues around non-commitment, but at the same time, they have a sense of sharing that's better. Our generation are probably more reliable in terms of commitment, but they're more selfish.
Our generation,
yes. Yeah, the younger generation are less selfish. They're more willing to share with each other and support each other. Did you know that?
No, but I'm listening.
So.
You're a sociologist, you're a philosopher.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, they're very kind in their to support each other. They really are. You know? At least the ones I know.
Yeah.
I don't know a certain segment, you know?
So you have concerns about what's happening to College Street. The rents are very high. Stores are having to close.
Just walk along College Street from Bathurst to Spadina. Walk first on the north side, then walk on the south side, and look at it. Just look. Look at the cigarette butts in front of the stores. Look at the storefronts. Look. Does this look like a thriving, wonderful place to be? It's not Queen Street, and it's not Bloor Street. But the rents are almost as high. Maybe not as high as Queen Street, but you know what I mean?
So that's a concern for you.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And part of that had to do with the construction on College Street. A lot of businesses went out during that time. It was a nightmare. We got no compensation.
And you said
And then the Harbor Street Village Association started with this fiasco around moving patios to the side of the road, and that was a fiasco. I don't know if you knew about that.
I don't know what you're talking
about. Well, that's a whole... I don't want to get into it on the tape recorder, but that was ridiculous. So basically, I personally... I know there's, you know, there's no association of businesses on College Street, and that's part of the problem, but I'm not going to do it. There's nobody who wants to do it.
And well, you're part of HVRA because you're on the north side. Harvard Village Residents Association.
Yeah, residents, but not a business
association.
The business thing. So businesses haven't had a lot of protection, and what was I going to say? And I've never, ever been treated really well by any level of government. And the government here is just terrible to small business. Right now I'm trying to enlarge the patio, and it's been such a long and expensive process. It's ridiculous. They don't fast-track anything. Nobody talks to each other. One office doesn't know what the other's doing. It's really terrible, and everybody complains about it. Everybody who has anything to do with business says the government is really disrespectful to business people, municipal particularly.
But small businesses in particular.
Yes. The fact that they close down streets and don't compensate businesses is shameful. It's terrible. How about if your street was under construction, you couldn't get to work? Mm-hmm. And you had no income. Don't you think you should be compensated? Do you think I should have worked for 2 years for free because the city was doing construction and all they have to tell me, oh, it's going to be better and you'll have more customers afterwards, and I didn't?
So you paid dearly for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
But you're feisty and you're still there and you're making it happen.
Because you know what? You can always say they did me in or whatever. You can always give up. Mm-hmm. It's easy to give up. It's hard to keep going. So what am I going to do? Nobody cares anyways. That's the other thing I realize. You can gripe and complain and everything else about anything, and nobody really cares. It's up to you to decide what you want to do. You want to stay, you want to leave. Right?
Yeah, I agree.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
That's the truth. So, yeah.
What's your relationship with Kensington Market? I know more restaurants have opened up there, but how does Free Times Cafe?
You know what? Yeah. Free Times Cafe, my personal relationship was that I used to go and do a lot of shopping there. So I felt like I was like the queen of Kensington. I used to buy a lot of stuff. I don't go anymore. My staff does. Free Times is unfortunately just outside of Kensington Market, right? So if you don't know about Free Times, you don't know it's there because it's not part of Kensington Market. It's part of the thing. Free Times is kind of in an odd location. It's not part of Harbour Street. It's not part of Kensington Market. It's like outside of it. So, but at the same time, I really reflect a lot of the things that Kensington Market is about. You know, the old Jewish market. I'm the one that's bringing the older Jewish population back to the area, more than Kensington Market is. And that was part of my mandate, and it has worked, you know. And I'm the one that the older people have their simchas with, and you know, they don't go to the restaurants in Kensington. Right?
Yeah.
So Kensington, you know, and also the art scene. So I'm kind of like stand alone.
But do you get, you know? But because you're not part of the market, and you're saying that's a negative, do you get some traffic because people are walking or driving along College? Is there some?
Yeah, a little bit. Let's say, okay, on pedestrian Sundays, let's say, from Kensington, I might get a little bit of overflow later in the afternoon from that. But I don't really get a lot. Mm-hmm. I can't rely on it. It's, you know, a few hundred dollars. But
yeah. And certainly your restaurant is very different from anything in the market.
Yeah, but all those places are also unique. And what's happening in the market now is actually they're going retro. You have all these sort of retro-style places opening up, you know, derivative to the old days, right? Which I really want to do myself, is do this little place called Bella's Kitchen, which I'd like to do next door to Free Times, and sell takeout stuff and have retro food and have making cooking classes, but I'm not ready to invest in that yet.
So you'd have to rent another space?
Yeah, and I'm not ready to do that.
Yeah, that would add to your expenses.
Yeah, yeah, maybe in the future.
But I can see that your mind is always churning and working and ready to modify.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah. You have to, because nobody cares. I had to go through the stop smoking thing where I lost 40% of my business overnight. I had to reinvent myself.
Did they come back? Did somebody replace that 40%?
Yeah, I worked on the brunch. I worked on food. I mean, that business never came back.
So that was shocking at that time.
Yeah. And we got no support through that transition. That's, again, the government just changes laws and we become instantly the bad guys. What did I do?
Before we say goodbye, I'm wondering if there are any stories, anecdotes, relating back to the early days, to incidents that have happened, people coming in off the street, difficult, okay, colorful.
Oh, my God.
I'm just wondering.
There's so many things. Every day there are so many things that happen. You know, another thing that we are, that people don't realize, is that so many people with emotional difficulties come to Free Times. You know, we take care of so many people because of CAMH and all that stuff. I used to make a joke, you know, the residents come in the afternoon and the staff come at lunchtime, you know. And we're a place where it's the only place for a lot of people where they feel at home, and I think it's very, very important, you know, in terms, because it's really easy in a big city to get depressed and feel lonely.
Yes, oh, right? Lonely. I agree.
In terms of music, so much of the music scene in the city is made at Free Times. So many people meet each other at Free Times. So many things happen out of the introductions that I make to different people, different aspects. I'm like a conduit of putting people together and things together and things happening. So many of my staff make friends and do things together. And my cooks also have been working with me for, most of them, between 10 and 15, 17 years.
Oh, good for you.
They're all immigrants from wealthy families. They're all from Sri Lanka and Afghanistan. Mm. And that, I've had different sets of cooks. I had boat people from Vietnam. I had gay women. I had Palestinian cooks at one time. They've all gone on to be very successful.
But you train them all, for sure.
Yeah. 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 And I also, you know, I'm demanding because it's a real thing, you know. And I find that a lot of times young people, that's been, I think, one of the weaknesses of the parenting of our generation, is that the parents weren't demanding enough on their children. And they let them make too many of their own bad decisions and didn't give them feedback on it.
And you're not making that mistake with your staff.
I can't afford to, because it's a business.
Yeah.
So, but I try to be kind to people about it. But, you know, they can't be wishy-washy. They can't be mediocre. They have to.
So you have high standards. You
have
hire
to, because
good
my
people.
Customers have high standards.
For
right?
Sure. Yeah.
And then I hire people. Like now I'm working with an assistant who's helping me again to get better standards of service with my staff. And also, you know, I'm working with three different assistants right now to organize all my databases, to organize all my social media, to get more catering and parties and this and that. So I'm always hiring people and working to improve and stay in the forefront.
And you have to be learning at the same time.
And I'm learning. Right now, I've got an iPad. I'm learning iPhone and an iPad and this and that.
It's fun, but it's also difficult.
Yeah. But you know what? The day I had problems myself with this business for many years, because I actually hated it probably for 10 years. It drove me nuts. Just hated it. It was so difficult. I was living on Eglinton and it was just really, really frustrating when I expanded into the bistro and I lost my customers from the smoking, and it was really, really hard. So I devoted myself to the brunch, because that's what was very successful. And then over time, I got a more positive attitude, and I realized that I had to devote myself. If I didn't devote myself, I'd always be in conflict and I'd always be frustrated and angry. So I devoted myself and things got better. So I still devote myself. And I'm there almost every single day. And I like it. I like it. People say, go home. I say, no, this is my home. I like it, you know?
Do you have any spot where you can have some quiet and
yeah,
privacy?
Yeah, my little booth across from the kitchen. That's like my upstairs office.
Uh-huh.
And then I have an office downstairs. There's a whole subterranean world below. I'll take you and show you. Uh-huh. We have a prep kitchen. We have a staff room and musicians' room.
But if you ever need some solitude or silence, you can have it.
No, not always. I try in my office, but people are coming and going and bothering me. It's trying at times.
Well, that's why I wanted to interview you at home.
That's right. It's trying
I figured
at times.
Too many interruptions.
I find as I get older, don't you find you get irritated by noise? I get quite sensitive to noise, right?
You're speaking to somebody who's very, very sensitive to sound.
Drives me nuts. I mean, just I had somebody in my office making some copies on the copy machine yesterday, and I was trying to do something. I don't like this noise. This noise is driving me nuts. But my last words is that I've always been a rebel. I've never believed in the status quo. I've always believed that the things that are told to us, that if you do A, B, and C, everything's going to be fine, everything's going to be great, I always felt like it was a line and not to go that way, because I never believe in that governments will put you in the right way or to rely on them solely, or the mainstream society will put you in that right way. I always felt that you got to think for yourself and make your own decisions, because if you don't, you're going to be end up being the one who gets, and it's true, and a lot of people have, you know. So in a way, I created Free Times as this special place that's a bit outside of a lot of the norms of society. It's a little more free, you could say, and I bear that burden for a lot of people. I take that responsibility, and that was the other thing of the devotion. I take the responsibility for my staff. I hold the responsibility for them, so that they can rely on me. Mm-hmm. I'm not an absent owner.
Well, and your presence in the restaurant is meaningful too. People love to see you.
Yeah.
And you say hello to them.
Yeah, I try.
A bit.
I try.
It means a lot.
My hardest thing is remembering people's names. And I'm sure you have the same problem. This is
you
the hardest
sure of that.
Thing. Especially when they come in and they say, "Hi, don't you remember me?" I say, "When was the last time you were here?" "Oh, 20 years ago." Right? I've been waiting for you, right?
Well, you do have a wonderful restaurant.
It is.
With all the different faces that it has, with all the different hats that you wear.
Yeah.
And the food is delicious. The ambience is terrific.
Thank you.
I want to say thank you very much for giving me your time today.
Yeah, it's great. I hope we went over enough things.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about the things that have enabled me to keep going, because remember, I've probably been working 7 days a week for most of the time I've had Free Times, although I did take 3 months off twice in 86 and 94, okay? But doing yoga for the last 22 years, anywhere from 1 to 3 classes a week, steady, and various retreats, plus swimming at least once a week for the last 36 years, and riding a bicycle, those are the key elements that allowed me to keep going. Especially yoga. If I hadn't started yoga, I would never have kept the restaurant, because I was just in so much pain, so much physical pain, and I was so stressed. And it allowed me to release the pain and to rebuild my body.
And to kind of regroup and chill out.
It still does.
Yeah.
And it still does. You know? So that was very, very key. And the fact that I didn't have my own children allowed me to have that kind of a mothering feeling for other people and other people's children, and I'm very much a mentor for my staff and for many of the young people that come in who need mothering.
So you
and fathering too. I can be a father too.
So you're saying that you give a lot to your staff, to your customers, but you get a lot from what you're doing, what you're giving.
Yeah, it's a give and take, you know. And people need to. I find so many people are so scared, you know. They're so scared to give. They live such meager lives.
And you know the pleasure of giving.
Yeah, and they shouldn't be so scared to give. Yeah. You know, right?
So it's more than a restaurant. I mean, you talked about these people who come in off the street. You talk about people with mental health problems, and they have a place to come and feel enveloped and accepted.
Somewhat. You know, we have our boundaries.
Well, they have to pay, I assume.
There's one guy, he comes in, he knows. He's a street guy, he's a druggie. He used to bring us stolen goods. I said, "Look, don't steal. Every time you come here, I'll give you some money, but I don't want any stolen goods." So he knows. Mm-hmm. I'll give him a toonie or a loonie. Done. no questions asked. And I know he's a crack addict and da-da-da-da, but he's still a human being, you know?
So you have a little piece of you is running a social service
agency.
That's just another
And then,
hack.
You know, David Goldblum, the head doctor, he's having a smoked meat sandwich at lunch. Yeah. And then the guy's, you know, it's a riot.
Yeah.
I mean,
I saw you having a conversation a couple months ago with Paul Garfinkel. You were standing outside.
I was talking about a friend of mine in dire need at the time with him.
So you consult with people, they consult with you.
When I need burden them.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I need to, I know if I'm in a crunch situation, I will.
They'll walk through your door.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I joke and I say, Eleanor, I say, you know, as long as I have 10,000 people at my funeral, I'm going to be happy. You know, I'm lining up names, right? Because I'm planning 102 and I'm going to drop dead right at my table there. Boom, 102. But I don't know if free times will last that long unless I can buy the building because I only have 12 more years left on my lease. So, you know.
Well, 12 years is a lot of years. You'll see where you go with that 12 years and
we'll
if you want to be running it.
Yeah.
But in the meantime,
we
eat well and we have a wonderful time.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. You know?
Turn it off.
At this time, the recorder was turned off. Then it was turned on again a few minutes later for a few final remarks.
Okay, Judy, go ahead.
So I was a very secular Jew. I didn't belong to a synagogue. I did belong to B'nai B'rith when I was a teenager. I wasn't brought up in an observant home. But by inventing this brunch and reinventing these kind of family gatherings that were typical in the 40s and 50s and the kind of booby food and booby love and the bit of chaos that went on, this other kind of lifestyle that people could relate to, and it brings people back to the area, which was a thriving Jewish area, and nobody would know it today. And people come with tears in their eyes and tell stories of these amazing times that they had. You know, and it's a shame that that has so much been lost.
Well,
right?
And the market was called the Jews Market, and there's certainly
the Jewish
big
people
waves
just
of immigration.
Left. And, and I always said, when the Jewish people left this area and they went up north, they lost a lot of the soul of their culture because the suburbs did not incorporate that kind of city soul into it. And people were isolated in apartment buildings and condos and went to plazas, and it died. And a lot of older people acknowledge and understand that.
Well, and you're giving us a little taste of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and I'm happy to do it, you know. And then people come and they're so happy and they can bring their parents and da-da-da.
Well, and they have the
cheese blisses
and the latkes.
And don't forget, I'm also the only place in the world that does weekly concerts of klezmer and Yiddish music. And the real latkes, real blintzes, not bullshit. That was one of the reasons why I wanted to have the food, because I'd go to these restaurants that were supposed to have good Jewish food and it wasn't real food, right?
And how about your brisket?
That's another story. Bringing in the brisket.
Okay, so that'll be our last story.
The first time, originally, my staff didn't know how to make other food other than the brunch food, so I wanted to bring in night food, and I was starting the concept of night buffets.
Uh-huh.
And I was living at Bathurst and Eglinton, so I was cooking all the food at home. Brisket, chicken matzo ball soup, all this stuff. And I get a call from the restaurant that the cook hasn't showed up. So I took all the food that I was cooking on my stove at home and wrapped it all up in blankets and towels and put it in my car and brought it down to the restaurant when I was over 50 years old. And then I opened up the kitchen and I cooked brunch, and then I continued to cook this food for the brunch, and I was in tears the whole time. It was a nightmare.
Because it was so much, so hard.
Yeah, it was so difficult, and I was getting no help. That's the only thing that I find, people thank me for what I've done, but few have ever offered to help me.
I'm not sure what you mean when you say offer to help you. You mean roll up their sleeves and get into the kitchen with you, or financially back you?
Anything, any kind of help. Financial help, nobody's ever given me a penny. You know, even when the place is packed and busy, you know, customers that appreciate the place, they never get up and say, can I help you with anything? Can I hang up some coats for you? Or when they see us in dire need, you know? So it's a real disconnect between the customer and business, which is unfortunate. I don't blame individuals. It's the society that disconnects people, actually, from business. They appreciate things. They don't know in what way that they can help.
You know, you're speaking to somebody. It's never crossed my mind when I'm in a restaurant to offer to help.
Well, on a normal basis, it wouldn't be necessary. Yeah. But I'm talking about in extreme circumstances, right? I remember...
You're educating me. You're informing me at this moment.
I remember Mitch Smolkin's father, Bob, actually offered to help up some coats, hang up some coats one time when it was extremely busy. And he's the only person who has ever offered to help me, ever. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Like as if I can do everything. That's the other thing. The customers see the owners and the people working in a restaurant as being more than superhuman. And yet they want everything, and it's, you know, I'm paying for this, and I have to get everything the way it is. Well, you know, hey, then don't thank me so much for everything afterwards. Do you see what I mean? It's hard to have that. You know, I've been in the kitchen doing dishes because it was so busy, and musicians are there laughing and whatever. They never say, can I help you? And I'm in my 50s, and I'm doing dishes because it's so busy. But yet they'll say, oh, Judy, we appreciate so much what you do, and blah, blah, blah. But part of that has to do with how much do people help their mothers? Or well, just take them for granted? How much do people take women's work for granted? Because we do. We take cooking for granted, cleaning for granted, all these magical...
Yeah, they happen.
They happen by magic, right?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
We're much more inclined to help with men's work if there's a situation. Can, you know, if the house needs to be repaired, people will jump in and help. And you see what I mean? I don't know. It's a very subtle thing, and I don't want to blame anyone or make anyone feel bad about it. But it's just kind of human nature not understanding how things could be.
You do have that disconnect when we're consumers in a restaurant, you're right.
Not just a restaurant, in any place, you know? So you have this disconnect between a non-profit, everybody volunteering and nobody gets paid, and then a place where people are getting paid, right? Which I disagree with. I think volunteers should get paid. I mean, they should be able to deduct their time as a tax benefit.
Okay, we're moving off.
But that's another thing.
Right,
we have this disconnect between volunteerism and paid work.
Yes, yes.
Which is unfortunate because work is work. Whether you're paid for it or you're not paid for it, it's still work. Right?
Well, maybe,
is it not?
Maybe you need to hire some volunteers and they get Sunday brunch free.
I can't, but you know what?
The
government won't let me do that legally. Yeah, yeah. I'm not allowed not to pay people.
Well, you're running a business.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just saying that, you know, it's a fine line between everything. It truly is, you know?
Well,
that's why I try to hire people
that
work hard, you know?
And we eat hard.
That's it.
Thank you, Judy.
Keep the food rolling.
I love it.